This episode of Pomcast is sponsored by Yarn in the City. Yarn in the City creates experiential, yarn-centric events for knitters and makers, designed to bring people together through a shared love of craft. Yarn in the City organises the annual Great London Yarn Crawl, taking place this year on Saturday, the 5th of September.
This year's Yarn Crawl will also feature an edition of a one-day pop-up marketplace, taking place at Chelsea Old Town Hall, featuring over 30 vendors from London and around the UK.
To top off the weekend, on Sunday 6th of September, Yarn in the City will be hosting pattern designer and technical editor Kate Atherley for two workshops in central London. Tickets go on sale Wednesday 1st of July.
Hi, and welcome to Pomcast, the podcast that accompanies Pom Pom Magazine. I'm Sophie Scott, and I'm joined, as ever, by the lovely Lydia Gluck.
Hello!
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Sophie. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking me so politely. That was really nice.
Well, you know, although we're friends, Sophie, I feel we need to maintain a certain distance. So I just thought I'd...
Well, we have. I don't know what you guys think. We are, like, hanging out every week or every day. I haven't actually seen Lydia in about a month. Like, well, we caught up at the weekend to sort of... finalized plans for this podcast, but yeah, I haven't seen you in ages.
I know, it's felt like a long, long time.
What are you gonna say? I know. Anyway, so what have you been doing?
Well, as some listeners may know, I've been in America. Went to TNNA, which was very exciting. Me and Megan were there with our pom pom stand, which had bananas, pom pom bananas. So we gave away bananas, which had cool pom pom stickers on them. And so I'll put a picture of that up on the blog. So we were not only giving people things that said pom-pom on them, but giving people healthy snacks. Because, you know, at shows like that, everybody gives away sweets, which is great because everybody loves sweets. But there comes a point when you're like, I can't eat any more sweets. And that's when you think, I'll have a pom-pom banana.
So and they went down good. Well?
They went down very well.
Why wouldn't they?
Well, exactly. Except for the one woman who was pregnant and couldn't bear the smell of bananas.
Oh, gosh.
But I felt bad for her. I'd created a sort of hell for her in TNNA. Everyone was walking around, like, eating bananas, and she's like, why? So, yeah, so TNNA was awesome. Caught up with loads of people, and Columbus is a very nice place. Mm-hmm. There's delicious ice cream. So we had delicious ice cream, went to the North Market, had donuts for breakfast more than once.
You said that you now understand donuts. You understand why Homer loves donuts so much.
Yeah, because I think, I don't know, I think most British people might agree with me on this, because donuts that you get in the UK are pretty bad.
Yeah, because when you I think of donuts, I kind of think like quite a cakey, dry thing.
With like bad jam.
With, oh, yeah, kind of like plastic jam.
Like, yeah, like bad jam.
Bad jam.
Yeah, whereas in the North Market in Columbus, there was like, you know, a kind of booth that mm-hmm. sold donuts, like really amazing fresh donuts. And there was sort of like a very curated collection, you know, there's like
artisan.
Sort of 6 to 8 artisan. Well yeah. Done. Sophie knows words.
More coming up.
Words? No. So yeah, there was all these tasty flavours. Megan had chocolate and bacon.
Whoa.
Which she enjoyed.
This is very Homer-esque.
Yeah, I know. I chose not to have chocolate and bacon, partially because I don't eat bacon.
Mm-hmm.
So I had raspberry and rosemary.
And it
was delicious. And it was pink,
mm-hmm.
which was also good.
Very good. Well, you should always match your donuts to your life.
Colour preference, yes. Exactly. So overall, the donuts were great. That was a good experience. And then we went to New York and did a trunk show at Brooklyn General.
Nice,
which
yeah.
was awesome. We had a really nice time. They made the sangria from the most recent issue.
Very good start to any evening.
Well, exactly. And there were amazing cookies that were like all in fun shapes and brightly coloured. And yeah, we had a really, really nice time. And thank you to everybody who came to visit us. It was so nice to meet everybody. And thanks again to Brooklyn General, of course, who were amazing. And then afterwards we went and like had some food and watched some music. And so that was great. And also got to look around New York. It was my first time there.
Yeah.
Went awesome. To the Museum of Modern Art. Mm-hmm. Saw the Bjork exhibition.
Oh, nice.
Which was very strange, but very good. It was
like Bjork in many ways.
Yes, exactly. There was a really cool, at the beginning, there was like an immersive music video experience with kind of speakers all around you. So the sound was coming from all different directions.
Oh, wow.
And the music video had been commissioned by MoMA. So I think now it's been released, but before that, only people who had been to the exhibition had seen it. It was really amazing. So yeah, I mean, I could go on. I shan't. There was too many things. But yeah, I had a really good time.
I feel we've got a lot to catch up on this podcast because we haven't seen each other. And then also we've been cramming in all the things in between this podcast. So I feel like we're obviously referencing things like, oh, and I did that. And did I talk to you about that?
I'd be like, no.
Guys, we need to tell you about this.
Yeah. So there's a lot to get through. So Sophie, how about you? How's the last month been?
Pretty awesome. I went to Ireland for a weekend.
Wow.
And
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Did you not?
No.
Okay, I went to Ireland. It's like cool. An 80th birthday party for like a friend of my boyfriend's family.
Awesome.
And yeah, it was great. Like everyone was really, really kind and lovely. And it was partly to celebrate this cottage that he'd like found when he was walking. I think he was like 20 something with his friend. And they were like, let's buy this cottage. It's really dilapidated. Like, let's build it to like glory. And he also set up like an eco village in the like, well, the village next to where they were. And the place we were was like very far on the west coast, like a tiny peninsula. So officially the middle of nowhere where we were, and on a massive beach. And it was amazing. It was like the most beautiful place, and only rained a little bit. And we went for like a big hike, which I loved. And yeah, and everyone played like professionally. Like music, because there's like a big musical. I think I've mentioned this before, like my boyfriend's family are like very musical. So everyone there was musical as well. And the kind of the icebreaker for most people was like, oh, what do you play? And I was like, the fool.
The knitting needles.
Well, here's the thing. I brought my Fika socks along with me for the journey. I was like, we've talked about the amazing portability of socks. And I was like, I'll take this. And it was one of those parties where it's like starts at lunchtime and it goes on to like the wee hours. So there was kind of like lots of sitting around talking to people. There's about 300 people at this party. And so I just like was doing my knitting. And then like, in the next 10 minutes, there was about 8 people around me who were like, tell me about your knitting. What are you doing? Wish I'd brought mine. And it was like so lovely to like, as an icebreaker where you kind of know only 4 people at this massive party, to kind of, introduce everyone to you and your other people. It was great.
Knitting is a power for good.
Yes.
In
so
many ways.
The other place I took my Fika socks to, which is my important thing that I have to talk to you and everyone else about, is Mad Max. Have you seen Mad Max yet?
I haven't, no. But Megan has.
My gosh.
She said it was good.
So good. Like, I was trying to explain how good it was to my mum when I was saying, you have to see this film. You know when, like, people say to you, like, you have to see this film. You have to see this film. I was like, no, you have to. And she's like, was it like when you told me to see Guardians of the Galaxy? And I was like, meh. And I was like, okay. So after I finished watching Guardians of the Galaxy, I was like, to the person I was with, like, oh, that was good. After I finished watching Mad Max, I was like, I was actually punching the air in, like, victory and joy at how awesome the experience I just had was.
Wow.
Yeah.
That reminds me that I went to a show on Broadway.
Oh, great.
Sorry, see, carry on with your
things.
Story first.
This is all the things. But no, but you've got to understand Mad Max.
I will. I'll go see it.
All right. So maybe people who think, oh, I'm not really into an action kind of driving film, which is what it is.
Yeah.
The most important fact of it is that I think it completely redefines a woman's role within an action movie. It's like super feminist as well, and like really kick ass. And Charlize Theron, oh god, amazing. She's got like a cool robot hand in it as well.
Ooh.
And this one bit, this isn't a spoiler in any way, this is like the most tiny fragment of the thing. She like takes some like axle grease off the wheel and like smears it on her forehead, and it's just the most badass scene. I don't know why. So, and I actually tried to start knitting. So, this is like a whole like, we're gonna be like mixing around in the podcast. I think we're gonna be referencing a lot of different areas. But I thought I'd take my knitting to the cinema because I was like, maybe I'll enjoy this film, but I can always knit in it. And 10 seconds into it, I knew I couldn't knit because it was so intense. But I thought I'd got my knitting out. And then the second that happened, my ball just rolled away from me down the aisles into 1,000 seats into the past of the space. I was like, oh crap. And I was like, what am I going to do? So I ended up basically winding the ball from where it was on my knitting. And basically, wherever the ball had trailed to, it was just getting smaller and smaller because I was just basically pulling it through the entire cinema. And all I kept thinking was like, oh, there's so many gross things on the floor.
And I kept like, popcorn and
yeah, literally. I just imagined this little traveling thing that my ball was going on like, but basically, and then I wound it all round back to my fingers. And then I was like, I'm going to put this thing down.
The moral of the story is, do go see Mad Max. Don't expect to be able to knit.
Yes. And there's also a cool, like, old lady who has seeds in her bag. Joe was like, my boyfriend was like, oh, that's who you'd be if you were an old lady in the apocalypse. And I was like, yeah. Anyway, so Broadway.
I saw a show on Broadway. Me and Megan went to see Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which is a musical. And it had a person in it who was in Glee, whose name now escapes me. Darren Criss, something like that. Anyway, it's basically a one-man show. One-person show, more accurately. And he plays this one character. There's a few other people in there. It's an amazing band. Anyway, Hedwig and the Angry Inch was made into a film, I think, in like the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love. I love that film. So I was very, very excited to see it on Broadway. And I loved it so much. Had the best time. I think I cried through the last song.
Oh, wow.
It was great. Yeah, I don't have much more else to say about it, really. Just that it was really super great.
Yeah. I think we've been feeling a lot of intense emotions this past month. Also, we just went and got smoothies before we recorded this podcast. I think the fruit sugar's done a lot for our emotions in this podcast. But what have you guys been up to? You guys have been talking on our Ravelry forums, which, of course, we'd love to hear you, see you, type to you there.
Like knowing you're there.
It's kind of, we've basically started the Pomcast Movie Club, I think. Because I was talking about Blade Runner, and then there's been this whole influx of 80s films where people are like, oh my god, have you seen this? Have you seen this? So we've had Kilter Craft is saying Splash and Big are two of her top picks.
Neither of which I've seen.
Oh, I love those. If you like Tom Hanks, and who doesn't? He's such a charming. Oh, he's just doing a weird face now.
I can't remember which one he is.
He's Forrest Gump.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, carry on.
So you love him, yeah?
See, I'm bad at films.
And Gemav, says Princess Bride.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
I know you love that.
Yeah.
And I Was, which we know stands for Irish Water Spaniel, which is the picture in her mouth. Picture now. So it's Footloose.
I have seen that, but not for a long, long time.
Okay, I was singing a lot to our producer just now, and he was enjoying that.
Somebody else, I can't remember who it was, said Harold and Maude.
Yes,
Is that an 80s film?
Apparently so. Well, it's within this,
I suppose it is.
Film appreciation.
I love that film. That was one of the few from the list that I've seen, and it's definitely one of my favourites.
And also, Tafe Ole, which is a great Rav name, by the way. She says, it's an urban myth, possibly, but she says Port Talbot in Wales, which is where she's from or living, inspired Blade Runner, apparently.
Which I was interested to hear because I grew up in Swansea, which is the next stop down on the train from Port Talbot, and I have many, many memories as a teenager going through Port Talbot at night when there's like all this steam and light coming out of the, I think they're steelworks, I could be wrong, but some kind of like big industrial kind of factory thing happening there. And at night, yeah, there's just like all this smoke coming out, and it does look pretty kind of a post-apocalyptic at nighttime.
Wow.
So I haven't seen Blade Runner, but I'll watch it, and then we'll be able to discuss this more at
the next
Pomcast Movie Club.
And I still need to watch Ghostbusters, but, you know, we'll talk about that
later. We'll get there.
Anyway,
we'll
so there. Knitting, that's kind of what we talk about
knitting,
as well.
Knitting, that's where we were getting to.
So we've talked about TNNA and general New York fun,
but
another thing we're at, closer to home, was the Muse Connection.
So the Muse Connection, which is a kind of small scale, but like very intimate, but very lovely event that's put on by Playful Day podcast and Curious Handmade podcast. Their second one was on Sunday, and both me and Sophie were there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very sweet and had asked me to talk. So I did a little talk about starting Pom Pom.
And I just pulled faces at her from across the room. No, I didn't.
No. So their theme was beginnings, and so I spoke a little bit about that. And it was very lovely. Rachel Coopy was there.
She talked also about, her advice was basically just cast on all the things, knit all the things, and good things will happen.
Yeah.
It was her nice kind of philosophy, saying there's very few things in the world where you can, like with yarn, you can unwind it, rewash it, ball it up, even put the label back on, and it will kind of pretty much look the same as when you started.
Yeah.
And she's like, let that kind of open your free, you know, let's not stop you kind of doing stuff like that.
Yeah. No, I found that very, very useful and
freeing.
Inspiring. Yeah.
And inspiring. Exactly.
Yeah, because she was saying that she also collects notebooks, which is something I do too. And you can't undo it once you've written in a notebook the same way you can undo it if you, you know, do a few stitches and you're like, oh, I don't like this. You can really easily
Get overwhelmed by the potential of yarn. That's what I want to say.
Oh,
that's
yes.
The soundbite that we
got. So that was awesome. So thanks again to the Muse Connection people. Mm-hmm. So we had a real nice time.
Yeah, awesome. So, knitting-based things. What have you been knitting? Tell and tell.
Well,
we tell each other. And you guys, about our knits. I feel like I have to get the catchphrase in.
Yeah, tell and tell. So, I have finished my Delita shawl, which I was making with the Shibui and the unicorn tail in the neon peach. I haven't blocked it yet, but I finished it last night, in fact.
Oh my god.
Were just you like, fresh off the needles.
Were you like, gotta finish it for the podcast?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Like, fresh off the boat, that's what they say, isn't it, when people have just arrived in a country.
Yes.
That's what my shawl is, in the country of finished objects. So I'm going to block it tonight. So that's very, very exciting.
It is.
I'm still knitting my Greco.
Oh yeah, your which took another summery top.
Yes, exactly. And I'm getting really like so many people have posted amazing finished Greco projects on our Ravelry group, so you guys should take a look if you haven't already. There's so many great colour combinations, and lots of people have gone with the classic one that we went with, which I can totally understand because it's a real classic. Mine's pink and grey, which is awesome. And actually, my Delita shawl is also pink and grey.
You're going through
a theme here.
Yeah.
It's obviously my phase at the moment. And I did start a garland jumper from winter issue 7, that is. It's winter.
I'm thinking back. That's like a mohair-y vibe.
Yeah, it's on the cover.
Yes, mm-hmm. Very
and
nice.
The original is like mint green.
You're testing me.
I've wanted to make it, you know, for I guess almost 2 years or something now. And I bought some beautiful mohair at Brooklyn General when I was in New York. So that's I literally have just cast on though. That's as far as that's going.
That's
how about
good.
You?
I've been having all the knitting disasters.
Oh.
But I'm kind of powering through them in like a blind kind of must finish it, even though it's going really weird. So my susu, which I've been doing for a while, is taking so long, and I've had so many mistakes, and it's just like, frickin' susu, what's going on? Like, cables being crossed the wrong way, and then like decreases just going up the wazoo, I don't know. And then I even like was like, is my gauge wrong? Is this going to be like, it's pretty oversized anyway.
Yeah.
But now I think it's going to be like, really even too big, and then like someone I was working with, they were like, oh, it does look a bit loose, and I was like, oh Christ. And I've nearly finished the back, nearly finished the front, so I've only got like sleeves and a little bit of front to go, and I'm just kind of got to power through. And I even thought, like, I'll get it finished for when we record the next podcast, and I'll have this whole happy story of how I finished it, but it's not there yet, you know. I do these things so you guys can like hear about it and sympathize. And then my fika socks, which are also going great,
yeah,
thought I was going to finish them for this podcast. Even said to you, we've even gotten the notes here, like fika socks done in my notes. I'm so optimistic. Not even happened. And then I like the stupidest and weirdest thing that I've ever done on a pair of socks, which I think is kind of related to when I was trying to knit them in Mad Max and something went wrong.
Mm.
So rather, when I've decreased for the toe, rather than the decreases kind of lining up like each side of mm-hmm. my foot, so like along the big toe and along the little toe,
mm-hmm.
they're basically in the middle of my foot.
Right.
And I've gone like a really like wacky angle, like I'm kind of curling my toes at one side, like, And I kind of put it on and I was like, why doesn't this quite feel comfortable? Because you're kind of all trying to shift the sock ground. I mean, in the scheme of things, it's just ripping back a toe and, like, figuring out why I did my deep.
But in addition to your susu worries.
Yeah, it's just, like, I'm not having a good knit vibe at the moment. Like, nothing. It's kind of getting there, but it's not really that flow when you have that meditative state.
This happens. Yeah. This happened to me with my Greco because I just wasn't paying attention, basically, and I just started knitting the back as if I was knitting the front and didn't really. I was like, oh, instructions! Effort! People, not me. I already read the instructions. I understand them. And then I got like halfway up the back and was like, okay, I really did not read. I was just like reading the wrong bit of the pattern. I was just like, come on, Lydia. Yeah, so I had to rip that back, which is one of the reasons that it's not anywhere near done. Because Greco is tiny as well. Like, it's not a big thing at all. Yeah, so that'll teach me to not read my patterns properly.
Yeah, I feel like we have to show both sides of the knitting story.
Exactly.
And say like, hey, I finished this cool thing. It was awesome. We also have to have the, what am I made?
Bad knitting. Yeah. Well, bad knitting, but yeah, it's quite easy to lose concentration, especially when you're trying to do things at the same time as other things, which is, like, I'm normally at least listening to something or watching a thing.
I'm going to breathe.
Yeah, trying to breathe and knit at the same time.
All right.
Difficult.
Well, we hope all your knitting projects are going much smoother.
Than
any of mine.
Yeah, and remember that we love to see you posting about them in our threads on the Ravelry forums. We have a knit-along, a pretty much permanent knit-along, basically.
Yeah.
So we've got our summer knit-along at the moment. So you can check that out and see all the lovely things people are making and maybe post your own lovely things.
Excellent.
We look forward to it. Our book for review today is The Colouring Book by Lee Meredith, and it's a very exciting book because it seems to combine knitting patterns with a colouring book, and everybody likes colouring books, let's be honest.
True.
Sophie is more familiar with the book than I am, so I'm going to interview her.
I did all my homework.
Sophie did all her homework. Sophie gets 3 gold stars I get no gold stars and no sweeties. But I do get to ask Sophie questions and learn about the book. So, tell me the kind of main feel of the book.
So it's part of a collaboration with Malabrigo Yarns that Lee Meredith has done for the Malabrigo Freelance Project.
Ooh.
So if you know Lee Meredith's designs already, I don't know if you do.
I am familiar with some.
Yeah, for those of you who aren't, she does a lot of fun stuff with like knitting. If you're watching a film, and then you can like change the stripe sequence depending on what happens in the film. You can do like knit alongs with like TV shows, or you like roll dice, and she's very clever, like playing with the colours and textures of what you can do in knitting. I think that kind of comes across a lot in this book, because there's pattern-based knitting, but also there's sort of a lot of technique-based tips for when you're working with colour.
Oh, nice. Okay. So what kind of techniques are we talking, Sophie?
So kind of things to make your projects go smoothly. So, like I said, there's a lot of colour work in there, but it's not like uber technical things like, you know, colour work or intarsia. Like a lot of the projects you're just sort of working one colour at a time, or like, you know, one colour in each row. And there's a lot of kind of tips for like to keep your back sides neat.
Oh, okay. Hey. Tip for everyone, keep your backside neat. Yes, Sophie, come on.
Your wrong side work.
Yes.
So there's less finishing to do and things like that. And the techniques I thought was a really good point. That's for left and right handed knitters. So if you knit continental, and there's like loads of clear photos, you've taken the time to kind of like break everything down like really easily, so you can kind of adapt it to your style.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That sounds good. And actually, I remember when I learnt to knit continental style, the things I found most difficult wasn't knitting and purling. It was more like things like knitting two together and like a bunch. So it was really nice that she's kind of laid that out for people.
Definitely, yeah.
And not just for people who've just learnt that technique, but just...
Yeah, I think
different.
It's good if you want to sort of... Yeah, it's sort of like a addition to other techniques you might know about, like, working with knitting, so it's, like, a more colour-based kind of thing. And there's patterns as well as these techniques, for, like, small projects for trying out these. And also, one of the nice things, it's not too rigid in what yarns you use and stuff like that. You can lead you to more experimentation, because I think that's kind of her vibe anyway, yeah, for, like, her patterns. So you can use different weights, different number of colours, and, like, the sizes are guidelines, sorts of stuff which are quite variable. Like, you can make a blanket or a headscarf. You know, there's two, like, sizing things within that, so you can play around with.
That sounds very exciting. And where does the colouring book element come in?
So there's a really cool bit at the back where she has, like, blank chart drawing spaces for, like, planning your colour combos. So,
oh, that sounds so good.
She says you can, like, photocopy it and then, like, colour in and be like, oh, maybe I'll use these green together. So it's good, actually, for using scraps.
Yeah.
And you can kind of play around with that.
So do you do have any particular favourite patterns from the book?
Yeah, so there's the Misanga, I think I pronounce it like that, hat, which is like for the super variegated yarns. It's kind of interesting. She talks about using to the length of the colour repeat in the yarn. She kind of talks about how you'd use that to its best advantage.
Okay.
Because sometimes you get those yarns which are like crazy beautiful in the skein, and then you knit them up and it's like, this is a bit too much.
Yeah.
And also the colour by number thing, when we were talking about like the little charts, that's for like a cowl or a mitt or a blanket or whatever. And that's again sort of using that kind of quite liberal sizing thing she's got going on, so you can choose how you want to interpret these patterns and projects. And there's also a great one, which is a plaid cowl. No, it's plaid?
I think plaid. I'm sorry, we're English, so we can't... The word plaid is confusing to us.
I feel like I can hear Megan's voice in my head saying plaid.
I'm pretty sure it's plaid.
Okay, God.
Sorry if we're wrong. I'll take the fall.
That thing that kind of looks like tartan.
Yeah, tartan style.
Yeah, she's got a cowl there, but I think it's interesting. You could do that something like a really nice kind of squidgy blanket using that technique as well.
Ooh.
So yeah, lots of things to have a little look at.
Awesome. So yeah, so you guys should check it out, and obviously we'll post links how to look the book up online, but I'm sure you can find it through Rav. It's called Colouring Book and by Lee Meredith. So check it out. Away.
Call yourself happy. So today we're joined by Felicity Ford, also known as Felix, more commonly known as Knit Sonic, who is a knitter, podcaster and sound artist. And we thought this pretty interesting, so we gave Felix a call, and here you are today. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, it's very nice to be on the podcast.
Excellent, thank you. All right, we're going to start with our classic question, which is, what is your early memories of knitting and when did you learn?
Well, I think like a lot of people, my gran taught me, and I have a memory of making a very trapezoid shaped piece of red garter stitch. I don't know if this is a common experience, but I found that when I started knitting, I just could never trust that last stitch at the end of a row, that it was okay to just pop it off the needle. And so I think I always knitted into that several times just to make sure. So hence it ended up being, yeah, a big trapezoid shaped thing that started out was supposed to be a square and just got wider and wider because of my fear of popping off the last stitch.
That sounds like an advanced technique you tapped into very early on though, so.
Yeah, some kind of like magic triple increase or something.
Fantastic. All right, so to your work at the moment now. So your name, Knit Sonic, derives from the craft, knitting obviously, and the sonic relating to sound. And your work at the moment is the relation and combination of these two things. How did these first two things blend together?
Well, this is a kind of involved question, but I think the simplest answer is that Knit Sonic began when I was doing an MA in sonic art and composition in Oxford, and I'd moved to Oxford, I didn't have any friends there, and I was like, where am I going to meet the quality women? And I saw that there was a local knitting group, so I joined that, the Oxford Blue Stockings knitting group, who still meet every week in Oxford. And I was kind of studying sounds during the day on this arts program, and then I was knitting, and I just started to think about how I could combine those things. And I suppose there's always been quite a feminist bent to my work as an artist, and when I was an undergraduate I'd really enjoyed learning about the feminist artists of the 1970s who did a lot of stuff around housework and childcare. For example, Muir Lederman Ukulis did this project called Maintenance Art, which was all about putting housework into the gallery. And, you know, when I first started looking into sound art, I felt like this side of things, domestic life, the sort of the politics of domestic life, if you like, the politics of housework, I just felt they were completely absent from sound art. Like, it had happened in other mediums like photography and gallery installations, but not so much with sound. So I started doing lots of work recording domestic sounds. And I think the first sort of thing that I made that was really like a knit sonic thing was like a giant speaker system. And it was 32 miniature speakers, and each one of them was covered in hand knitting. All the wires were covered in hand knitting. And I played all these domestic field recordings through it. So I started a PhD looking at the domestic soundscape and presenting everyday sounds to audiences. Yeah, that knitted speakers piece, I think the things I liked most of all about it were the fact that, first of all, I'd kind of empowered myself to make a playback system, which was really liberating, because I don't know how many sound art installations you've been to, but certainly in the early sort of 2000s, there was like a lot of big chrome and black Genelec speakers arranged in a special configuration with a mixing desk. And I was just like, well, I can't afford to make that actually, because I can't buy all those monitors and speakers. And there was something really liberating about just sitting there with a soldering iron and some little really cheap speakers from Maplin and building my sound system myself, which I'm sure every knitter can relate to that. The pleasure of making your first kind of pair of socks and being like, I understand how socks work now. It was kind of the same with the speaker system. So I liked that. And then I also liked the fact that how it kind of manifests is this huge tangle of little woolly speakers that hang at head height. And you kind of have to, they only play the sounds at quite a low level. And so you have to enter into the knitting and hold it up to your ear to properly hear the sounds. So, and it, unlike headphones where you sort of put them on and then you're kind of sealed away in your isolated listening spot, this cloud of knitted speakers is a really, like three or four people can go in at a time. you can all listen together. So it has this sort of social and fun aspect to it, and then this empowerment of just making my own speakers. So I think there was a few ideas there about gender and technology and kind of finding new ways of presenting sounds to audiences that I thought, oh, there's some juice in this idea. I must continue to pursue it. So that's when I started my PhD.
So these two things, I mean, obviously you've talked about them a little bit more, you can kind of connect them, but they do seem quite different, the sound and knitting. So why do you feel they work so well together? Is it actually because they're so different that you can kind of play against those opposites?
I think the thing is, once you find an obsession, you just have to keep going with it. And what I found is that since that first knitted speaker piece, you're quite right, people always say, I have Knit Sonic sprayed on the side of my car. And the amount of people that are like, what is this? What does it mean? How do you kind of, you know, knitting and sound, that's not an obvious combination. But I found more and more ways to bring them together, I think, just from keeping going with it. Maybe to talk about some other more specific examples. I met a shepherd in 2007, Julia Desch, who was the first shepherd who I ever met. And I was just staying on her farm and writing up my MA. It was just by accident. I didn't realise that she had sheep and wool and this kind of thing. I just found a place to stay in the countryside to work on this massive write-up. And I got very interested in what she was doing with her sheep. And I sort of started asking her about it. And it was the first time that I, as a person who grew up in a city, had really understood, you know, there is a sheep in a field and this ball of yarn comes from that sheep. And these garments, she's got these amazing examples in the wool room. You know, these garments come directly from this landscape, which really struck me as a super inspiring idea. And I was also a bit astounded that it was such a new idea to me. And I started really thinking, well, where do our clothes come from? And I decided to, I asked her, can I make a radio show with you? I want to record your sheep. I want to record the mill where your fleeces are spun. I want to record me knitting with the yarn and basically use sound to tell the whole story of kind of a garment. And I was really struck by how much you can say about wool and its origins in the landscape by using sound. And I guess then in 2012, I revisited my knitted speaker system that had formerly been covered in acrylic yarn, playing domestic sounds. And I stripped all of the covers off and I re-knitted coverings made out of British wool, and particularly wool from the Lakeland breeds. So like the Herdwick and Ruffell, the Swaledale. And I interviewed shepherds and I recorded sheep from their flocks, and I played the sounds of the Lake District wool growing in the field, so to speak, through these little knitted speakers. And I think in particular with that, it's like I don't know if you've ever felt a Ruffell fleece, but it's a very strong fleece and it has very long, thick, kempy fibres in it. And if you hold it up to your ear and pull it apart, you can hear the scratchiness of the texture. And then if you go to the Lake District and you go up on the High Fell in January, which is when I was there, and you listen to the wind and you listen to the mud and the kind of the sound of hooves on the wet ground, then suddenly the strength of that fleece makes sense. And so I think the sounds can be used to really, really tell the story of something like that, the provenance of wool in the landscape. And Bridget Kelly said a really nice thing about the refreshed knitted speakers. She said it was like listening to wool, which was exactly what I wanted it to be like. And people were just, it was very nice to watch people kind of come in, go up to the speaker system, hold the speaker to their ear, and you know that they can hear the place where the wool in their hand has grown from. So, and it would, I don't know how else you could describe the texture of place other than with sound. So yeah, I think as I've kind of continued with the Knit Sonic commission, there's a very strong theme of texture and using sound to describe the texture of places. And also this idea, this nice, lovely word, yarns, which can be a yarn that you knit with, but it can also be stories. I think the more that I've done my projects, the more I realise how important stories are in them. And there's often people talking in my work, and it's not just sounds. The sounds are there in as a kind of layer of storytelling.
It's wonderful. So it's all like a whole sort of sensory experience with your work.
That's the plan, yeah.
Fantastic. All right. So I wanted to talk about one of your more recent projects, your book, Knit Sonic Stranded Colourwork Sourcebook.
Yes.
If people haven't seen this, it's an amazing kind of book exploring how you create colourwork and giving people the tools to create their everyday inspirations. And it mainly sort of focuses on using very sort of, you know, ordinary, obviously they're not ordinary when you kind of make them into an amazing colourwork thing, but taking these everyday sources to make inspirational colourwork. What source do you find yourself returning to most often?
Well, I think there's a couple of things I like to say. I think one of the things I try and get across in the book is the richness of recording things. It's not just acquisitive, like let's find a pattern that we can use to make a thing, but it's also about the fun process of that, which really comes from my work with sounds, I think, and sort of standing there for 20 minutes recording the wind. That place where I've stood and done that will never be the same again. Every time I walk past, I think, oh, that's where I stood and recorded the wind. And it's kind of like, if you do that in your knitting, by the time you've looked at something, taken photos of it, made a sketch, done a drawing, you've invested in it, you've made a nice relationship with it. And I really try and show that in the book, the value of recording things. And in terms of the everyday inspirations, I just keep returning to the same things, like the A4074 road, which is the inspiration source for one of the swatches in the book. I made a radio show about that for BBC Oxford in 2010, and I have a whole hard drive of recordings of that road. So with the A4074 road, it's a 24-mile walk from one end to the other using the footpaths around it. And I've done that walk quite a lot of times, including right through the night, which was an amazing experience. And somehow that, from doing that and making a radio show about it, from working on a swatch about it, the whole place is completely tattooed on my mind. And rather than be like, I have to find a new source of inspiration, I just have an instinct to return again and again to this road. So I'm hoping to go there and do the walk for my birthday this year. So the A4074 road between Oxford and Reading, that's a definite constant source of inspiration. The brickwork of Reading, I am never ever going to get bored of the brickwork of Reading. I keep finding like new patterns. That's another thing that's in the book. And it's just this amazing style of really ornate, elaborate, highly patterned brickwork, just because of a happy coincidence of different kinds of clays and firing techniques in Victorian Reading. And I just love it. I keep finding new variations on these kind of brickwork themes. And if I'm ever feeling down, the instant solution, just go out with the camera, take pictures of the brickwork. It's just my favourite thing. My little handheld recorder on which I am recording this interview, that is another inspiration source that's in the book. And I'm still thinking about I'm actually working on a podcast at the moment that's about the recorder and its role in my kind of creative process. And what I really love about that, and what was surprising when I was working on the book, is that it's such an uninspiring object in and of itself, just a little black plastic consumer electronics product. And I thought, oh God, am I going to find anything worth knitting in looking at this? And I came up with all these great motifs just from really looking at like a corner, the edge of a microphone, the glowing red record button when it's on. And I found all these super patterns in it just from really looking at it. And I think that made me kind of curious to do more things with the Edirol. I'm kind of curious to see how long it's going to last. It's made so many thousands of recordings. I'm dreading the day when it eventually dies. But yeah, so the Edirol is a constant. I keep returning to that. Yeah, I don't really... I tend to keep going with the same themes over and over again and just trying to refine what I'm doing with them. And I just love, I love normal, everyday, comforting, predictable, real reality. It's just my favourite place to work in.
All right. So I read in that you wanted your book to be part of a great knitting tradition, sort of classic styles that have kind of held up the test of time. Why was it important to share that process with people?
So I think it's not so much that I wanted to be like some kind of, I am the great creator of a great knitting tradition. That's not kind of what I mean by that at all. It's more that I can't really lay claim to a great knitting tradition in the way that some, for example, if you've grown up in Shetland, you're like, the knitting comes from my people knit. This is the history of my people, if you see what I mean. And I feel like I can't lay claim to that because I'm not a Shetlander. And the same with like the amazing tradition of, say, Harris Tweed. I'm not from Harris or Lewis. And I don't. So I kind of think, I suppose I also thought about this when I was in Estonia, and people in Estonia have a super, like there's a very embedded kind of region specific set of ideas about clothes. So if you're from a certain parish, there are certain patterns you'll use, there's certain colours you'll use in a striped skirt. And this was kind of very popular in the 1800s, but lots of people are sort of revisiting that now and kind of working back into that idea and being like, well, I'm from this village and this is the pattern that's particular to there. And I was like, well, I can't go back into a regional knitting tradition that I belong to and do that, because I don't come from anywhere that has a kind of a region specific knitting tradition. I'm really interested in making a process, a knitting process that will allow people to make roots. So it's like my own version of a knitting tradition. It's like a way of interpreting the world around us in our knitting in a way that's specific to where we live.
Is that the sort of the main thing you hope people will take from the book?
Well, there's that. There's the idea. I really hope people will enjoy that process of exploring their neighbourhood with a fresh perspective and finding patterns that help there, that help them to feel a bigger sense of connection where they live. But also, I just, on a much more practical level, I just want the book to encourage people to take risks and to be creative with stranded colourwork. And I wanted to supply really practical information on creative process and on translating the world into stranded colourwork. And yeah, I hope that the swatching system will help people to turn kind of vague ideas or impulses into solid, workable motifs, themes, colours, patterns. So yeah, it's supposed to be very empowering and very practical.
I like that. It's good. Yeah, it is. All right. So tell us more about Wovember.
So I already spoke about meeting Julia Desch in 2007. And that was super important for me because she really opened my eyes to the massive gap between producers and consumers of wool. And she sort of, from her, I learned that many fleeces were being burned, that lots of the wool on sale in kind of yarn shops is not produced in the UK, that many UK sheep are bred purely for meat, that the quality largely has gone out of a lot of wool. And all of that is a little bit less true now, because bear in mind, this was 2007 and the price of wool is rising because of the campaign for wool. And with my friends who knit, we talked a lot about this kind of stuff, about the plight of shepherds, the provenance of wool, people trying to make a living from growing and selling wool. And I think it was 2011, my friend Kate published a post about the misdescribing of non-woolen garments as being wool, like people marketing woolly jumpers that are purely made of acrylic. And something inside me just kind of snapped and I felt really angry and articulate about the specific problem of people cashing in on the image and the romantic associations of wool, having not done any of the work that is involved in actually producing real wool from a messy, hungry, difficult animal, a sheep, you know. So Kate and I started Wovember in 2011 with the aim to highlight what wool is, what makes it special, and all the work and labour and the traditions that are associated with wool.
Fantastic. Well, we've talked a lot about animals, as in mainly sheep, but our most important question in the podcast, of course, is what is your spirit animal?
Oh, that's really difficult, because I have a great love for many, many animals. So I don't know. I have a real thing about weasels. I just love weasels. They're like, they're voracious. They have extreme amounts of energy. And they're just so, they just seem extremely exuberant. And and kind of the way they move is very frenetic. I relate to their, they seem over caffeinated in some way, which I sort of relate to. But I also have a real place in my heart for the Herdwick sheep breed in particular, just because when I was interviewing shepherds in Cumbria about the Herdwick, I kept coming across these accounts of people, I don't know if you've heard of the Heft, but where you've got common land, basically the sheep from all the different shepherds who graze there are hefted to a particular part of the common land. So sheep will remember where they spent their first summer as a lamb, and they have an instinct to return to that place. They have a really, and when you talk about hefted stock, you're talking about sheep that know their own place on the hill. And I just kept hearing these heartbreaking stories when I was doing my interviews in Cumbria of people moving Herdwick sheep out of the Lake District, and then the sheep escaping and dying on their quest to get back to their place on the hill. And that instinct for home and that sense of being so super connected to one place, that really spoke to me. So weasels and Herdwicks, there you go.
I did sort of sense there might be a sheep-based one in there for you, but we haven't had weasels before. I did like that. I like that.
Weasels.
All right, and then our next question is, if you're cast upon Desert Isle and you're only allowed to take one yarn with you, you're allowed unlimited supply in all the colours, what would you choose?
So if I was only allowed to take one yarn and just one ball of it, I would take Julia Desch's Wednesday Dale yarn, because it was so, because I discovered so much about wool that's been really important to me when I saw her yarn. But if I was allowed unlimited colours, just have to be Jameson and Smith 2-ply Shetland jumper weight. It's my very favourite yarn. And then I could knit stranded colourwork based on all aspects of the desert island.
Ah, perfect. Yeah. How do you think you'd fare on the desert isle then?
I'd be very happy, because I'd just be I'd be making swatches based on the palm trees and and the fishes and the shells. There would be so much to translate into stranded colourwork. It would feel like home in no time.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thanks for chatting to us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
So if people want to keep up to date with your work and what you're up to, where should they go?
They can go to knitsonic.com, and that is spelt with a K at the end, not a C, knitsonic. And they can also go to thedomesticsoundscape.com/WordPress, and that's kind of that's a bit more of just like a super personal diary of all the stuff I'm up to. The everyday, the lovely, dull, everyday wonderfulness gets put there, whereas the Knitsonic website is a bit more, here's my podcast, here's an art show I'm doing.
Something for everyone to look at then.
Exactly, yeah. Hopefully.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks, take care, bye.
Bye.
And if places were graded and sorted for their wool, then Shetland would be an ace, 1 star and 4 marks. And I am so happy to be here to share this wonderful textile that we should all wear.
So thanks for Felix. What a lovely, interesting lady.
She is wonderful.
Thanks to her for letting us use some of her sounds that she's recorded. One of them especially that you heard at the very end was her Shetland Wool Week song for 2013, which we mentioned in the interview. You can actually find that on YouTube if you kind of... We'll put a link to that if you want to listen to the whole thing, because it's good fun.
Yeah, so thanks again to Felix for being a superstar and joining us here on the podcast and letting us use her fab sounds that she's worked so
super
hard
turbo
to collect. Yeah, super turbo Felix.
That's what she uses, like turbo. All All right, so moving on to Ravelry realness.
The realest place.
We check Ravelry, so you guys don't have to. So in the kind of theme of Lee Meredith using all those colours and scraps, we thought Ravelry realness could be about stripes / scraps.
Yeah, so projects that use up your scraps of yarn, and often these projects involve stripes because...
Hey.
Stripes can be scraps, and scraps can be stripes. And this is the relationship between them. There's like an arrow with two ends.
We do a whole Venn diagram and like...
Yeah, there's a lot of intermingling of those two themes. So that's what we've gone for today. And right, what you got, Soph?
So this is us both reading for our technical notes. We can be like, well, I always love it. Do you like it on radio shows when you hear them like reading? When they're like going through emails and then you hear them going to go... And they finish the email. They're like, whatever, done with that email.
So we're just rustling through our notes.
Very efficient, very efficient. Yeah. All right, so one thing I found, which, because I think sometimes it's difficult to get scrap projects, which sometimes can look, I don't know the best way to describe it.
Scrappy?
Yeah, you don't want it to look too scrappy, because then you can kind of look...
Like you didn't think it through.
Yeah. And sometimes that's fine.
Yeah.
Sometimes I didn't think things through. Sometimes I just needed to go to the shop in my pajamas with my coat over the top. But
and then accidentally bumped into somebody you haven't seen for ages, and they're like, "You wear your pajamas."
And I was like, "I just need milk, and I'm sorry, Sunday morning." But sometimes, you know, I'll put earrings on. I don't know. You kind of get where we're going with this. Anyway, so one of the things I found, which was very elegant and charming, was the three-color cowl by Yohei Locatelli, who we interviewed couple of podcasts
ago. We did. She is fab.
So I wouldn't initially think of this as a scrap project, but she uses three colours, and of each of those three colours, you only need 200 yards.
Ooh, nice.
So like total of like at least, you know, I'm going to jump between the metric and imperial here, at least 549 metres in total.
Mm.
And I think one of the nice things you can do with that, if you've maybe used like half a skein or a third of a skein for something like a project like some socks or a shawl, I think that's one of the nicest ways to kind of combine those stripes together for a cowl. So I really like that one. Also, another cool one was the 10-stitch blanket by Frankie Brown, which is free, by the way.
Ooh.
So that's kind of based on Elizabeth Zimmerman pattern. We all love her, she's great. And the idea is when you're doing a blanket, you can imagine you're casting on like a 10 bajillion stitches.
Yeah.
And like knitting and knitting and knitting, which is great for scraps of blankets and stuff like that. But this, you're only working 10 stitches at a time, and you're actually going round in a spiral, so it's kind of... You're kind of working on the edge. There's no sewing or anything, but you're kind of picking the stitches up as you go. Cool. And then you could even work for, like, I think it'd be good for, like, light to dark, and you can kind of get, like, a really nice kind of gradient going. I mean, even if it's not all the same colours, but you can kind of go from maybe cool to warm, kind of with your tones of your colours.
So fun, like, lining them out beforehand, like, when I arrange my nail varnish, put them all in colour order.
Another theme on scraps, I was doing, this isn't like a project as such, but more of like a setup of stash even. Mm. So Clara Parks, we interviewed her as well.
She's so great.
We're biased about all these people we're choosing, like, oh.
They're all so great.
We talked to them. They let us talk to them, maybe. Yeah. She has this thing called the magic ball. Do you know about this?
I do not.
So it's the idea that you can grab all your yarns, like scrap yarns of like similar, maybe you want to go for like similar textures or similar colours. And then basically you lay them all out and you arrange them, and then you can grab like maybe just a metre of one, tie it in, wrap it round, and then you kind of pull another one like, oh, I want a little bit of this, but a different length. Mm. And basically you pull all these yarns, kind of putting them together. So you basically, you're putting them together to kind of create one massive ball of your stash that you can then knit from.
Whoa.
Yeah. There's a lot of the ways that like Kay Fassett works, sort of like pulling all the different threads together to make his like amazing multi-tonal waistcoats and stuff like that. So that's what kind of the inspiration she's pulling on. So yeah, you have different lengths and different strands, tie these all together. And she was saying it's great for like pillowcases and stuff like that, because then you can make sure all your ends are like pointing inwards.
Yes.
So you don't have to worry about threading them in, because oh man, would there be a lot of threads to sew in. But then I've also seen like mittens done with it as well. Oh. And if they're odd, all odd colours, then you don't have a pair of matching mittens. So stuff gets lost, you can just do it again. And if all the threads are on the inside, then that's kind of all right, I guess.
It's like thrumming.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like thrumming, yeah. So
that's like, awesome.
So yeah, that's pretty cool. I thought that was like, if you have like stuff that even like cut off ends from projects, they're a little bit too long, but you're like, well, what am I going to do with this? But you can't better throw it away, because why waste things?
Mm-hmm.
Magical.
Make to amend. Very cool.
Yes.
Well, I have here the Babette blanket.
Oh, that's a nice
which
one.
Which is a crochet blanket. So, I mean, crochet blankets, like little blanket square, you know, motif blankets, they're kind of classic from the scrap using.
Oh, of course.
The land of scrap using.
Yeah. And which we are currently residents of.
Yeah. yeah, and that's a particularly lovely one. And it's got kind of squares of all different kind of sizes. Mm. And there's a really beautiful example of that at Loop, of course. And Megan has made a really gorgeous version, which I'm sure we'll be able to get some pictures of to show you guys. It's so pretty. I did start, I do have like a stash of crochet squares that I'm hoping will one day become a blanket. I just kind of do one every now and then when I'm not sure what else to get on with.
Oh, really? I didn't know you did that.
Yes. Mm. Yes. I'm a woman of many mysteries.
You're a man of many mysteries as well.
I am also a man of many mysteries.
That was the main mystery. I didn't see it coming at all.
And I was also thinking that the Arionette socks from our autumn issue from last year, the originals are like in pink, orange and blue.
Mm.
And it's kind of like a slip stitch design. You would need like, you know, they're not like teeny scraps, but small amounts of sock yarn. Because you could even have them mismatched.
That's okay.
Socks, yeah. You know. And it's, yeah, they would be really, really good. And I also was browsing through Rav, as I do on occasion, and found a really beautiful version of the Vitsipa hat from Spring, which is also Hohi Locatelli, the design that she did for us for our Spring issue. And Crafty Sarah Ashley has done an amazing version where sort of it's a colourwork hat, and she's done like the background is all the same, but the colourwork, each kind of motif, I suppose, is different.
Oh.
So it's really pretty, and I was thinking that would be a fun way to use up scraps would be to use them in colourwork motifs.
Nice. Cool. Well, I also did fall down the rabbit hole of tiny, cute animal things that have been made on Ravelry, which I think is another Ravelry realness all in itself.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
I don't know. I don't know how to save this because it's so good now.
Just do one.
Oh, God, which one do I choose?
Should we just keep them on tenterhooks for next week?
I think I'm going to have to because some of them are so good.
Okay. So, you know what it's going to be, guys? The Ravelry realness for next time. It's going to be tiny, cute things.
Tiny, cute things.
Tiny, knitted things. Okay, well, that pretty much wraps up that Ravelry realness.
Ravelry is what?
Fundamental.
Smoothies, so that can only mean one thing. We're now at top three.
Top three! And what's our top three this week?
Podcasts.
Whoa!
A bit meta.
Meta!
Yes.
Talking about podcasts on podcasts.
So we recommended this by Moni's Cookies? Mooney's Cookies?
Yeah, one of our lovely people who chats in our Ravelry group.
Yep.
So thank you.
You're from Manchester, so if that's you, that's who you are. And Gemma V? Gemav? Yeah. I'm going to pronounce that a weird way again. Both of you said, I think someone else even, which I couldn't find, I was going scrolling back to the history of the forums, recommended podcast. And they said knitting or non-knitting, and we've gone for non-knitting.
Yeah, we've decided to go for non-knitting for this, for the purposes of this particular top three.
Mm-hmm. So, do you want to start?
Yes.
I feel you have a more comprehensive list. I feel you're going to be like really out there and cool with all your podcast
recommendations. I don't think I am, because I think, anyway, we'll get to that in a moment. Well, but I'm going to preface this with, my friends are so sick of me because 9 out of 10 sentences that I start with, I listened to this really interesting podcast, or I heard this really great thing on a podcast, or have you heard this podcast, or podcasts are so great, I love podcasts.
I don't know what you're talking about, Lydia.
No, you don't talk about podcasts all the time. No, I'm basically completely addicted to podcasts. I can't do anything without listening
to
them.
That's good. Well, who do you want making your podcast for you than a complete podcast geek?
Exactly, and that's me. So I found this really, I think I found this more difficult in some ways than the book one.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, I've definitely read way more books, probably.
Someone was telling me that podcasts are the new blogs.
I think they are. I think they're the future. We are the future, Sophie. Anyway, back to the top three. So this was really difficult for me, okay? And I just want to say to all the podcasts I listen to that I love you all equally and that it was a really hard decision and that it doesn't reflect me not liking you. Okay, so at number three,
mm-hmm.
I have put Answer Me This.
Okay, good. Tell people about Answer Me This.
Answer Me This is a very funny podcast. It was one of the first, I mean, it's like 8 years old now or something. It's been going for a long
five.
Time. Five.
Maybe? Hmm. Anyway, at least 300 episodes plus.
Yeah, they've been going for a long time. And it's Helen Zaltzman and Ollie Mann and Martin the Sound Man. And they are funny. And they have lots of good jingles. And I've chosen this as my number three because they make me laugh. and I feel that this is a positive thing. They're definitely worth it for the fun jingles.
Yeah.
I'm sure Sophie would agree.
I'd agree.
Very good at jingles. So that's number three. Number two was really difficult. I've gone with 99% Invisible.
Oh, I haven't heard of this one. So what? You are using cool ones now.
Sophie! So 99% Invisible is presented by Roman Mars. And oh, that's no, his I real have... name!
Okay, so you know you were saying you're one of those people who talks about podcasts, and then you're always like, listen to this one, listen to this one. There's so many that Lydia recommends to me that I can't keep on top of them. But now she's talking about it, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and the most exciting, one of the fun facts that we learned at the podcasting thing we went to.
Oh yeah, we learned how to be good podcasters.
We learned that, so that's why we're so good at it. So, is that Roman Mars records his podcast with two shotgun mics pointed at him. So he sounds like he's like directly inside your brain. It's very good. But it's basically a podcast about invisible design in everyday life. So it's like the broadest of themes. And they're quite short episodes. They're like 20 minutes normally, so quite kind of bite-sized. And they cover just so many different topics. So some of my favourites have been, they did a topic on like the design of the dollar in the US and like the history of it. And I found that really, really interesting. And they did one on barbed wire, which is one of the best, like most interesting stories I've ever heard. It was really fascinating. And there was also one on billiard balls.
Okay.
So it's all these like little kind of...
It sounds like I'd like this one actually.
Yeah, and it's like design in the broadest sense. And it's very clever because they've chosen a theme that basically encompasses everything, but means that they have a particular angle on everything. Mm-hmm. They're looking at it from the perspective of how and why it was designed that way in some capacity. I think they've been doing it for quite a while and it's quite a well-known one, I think, but it's just brilliant. It's really, really good. I think it's like weekly maybe, so it's quite satisfying.
Mm.
So that comes highly recommended from Lydia. And at number one, it couldn't be any other. It had to be Radiolab.
I thought you were going to say the number one that I was going to say, and now you haven't. My heart's broken.
Oh no, we don't love each other as much as we thought we did. Anyway, I'm going to qualify this.
Okay.
As we always do. We don't just read out a list and then be like, bye everyone! I chose Radiolab because Radiolab is the first podcast I started listening to. And it has some of the best episodes, I think, of a podcast. It might not have the same longevity as something like This American Life or 99% Invisible even. I don't think it's nearly as old as This American Life, but it has like, longevity isn't the word I'm looking for, like consistency. I don't think Radiolab is consistent, but I think that when Radiolab gets it right, it's the best. It's my favourite. It's the one that has moved me the most. And I've learned the most from. And I just love Jad and Robert so much. And when I finally saw pictures of them, I was like, I love you so much. So, like, my dream is to be able to, like, see them live one day. And, you know, because they do those kind of live events. Yeah. It couldn't be any other, really.
Wow.
Well, so emotional about Radiolab.
I was
going
to say, yeah.
Okay.
All right. So
Sophie, go.
I like podcasts, but I don't think... I can't, you know, maybe I don't want to be as like involved with podcasts as you are. And I actually, for this podcast, I listened to loads of new podcasts to see if I could find like a new favorite. And I'm not, you know, I'm not there as I am with you with these like new, I haven't found my ones yet. Mm-hmm. But the ones I do love, I love. Okay.
Okay,
if that makes sense.
Yes.
So number three, I'd go with the back episodes of Desert Island Discs.
That Kirstie almost Young. Made it on my list, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so... kind of basically where we take our Desert Island yarn from. So yeah, if you haven't heard, listen to this. It's Kirstie Young, who has the most beautiful sonorous voice. Is that the word I want?
Yeah, she's good.
She's great. And she interviews like everyone from like Stephen Fry to like
Jarvis Cocker.
Like, I can't
famous. A lot of them are people you might not have heard of because they're like very famous and eminent, like biologists.
Yeah, or like surgeons or something. It's just the most like incredible stories about people's lives, and she kind of has this amazing, like, she kind of extracts all the story from them, and she's like, oh, and then you were a teenager in Zimbabwe, and then what happened there? And they're like, oh yes, and here's this song that reminds me of them. So you not only do you get this amazing playlist, they always play like great music, but yeah, you get this whole insight into someone's life, and people you never think to like maybe research or even you know about.
Yeah.
And I remember as a kid, I always thought it was really boring because people would choose classical music, but now even then, like, maybe I'm grown up slightly, I can be like, yes, excellent.
I mean, for people who aren't familiar with the back catalogue of the BBC, Desert Island Discs will be going for like 50 years or something. And the premise is that you have to choose 8 discs for Your Desert Island.
Yep.
And now it's a podcast and you can listen to all of them.
So that's great. Yeah, so that's great. Something to tap into. So yeah, definitely recommend that. Number two would be Answer Me This, because you've already said, well, we've all talked about that. But I don't think we explained what it was. But basically, Answer Me This is where you, they get people to send in questions. Some of them are like really serious, like, you know, if you, I can't think of any of them now.
Well, often they'll be like sort of like emotional, difficult things.
Yeah, like I lost my job and now I split up with my boyfriend. What do I do?
Yeah.
And then some of them are like, one of them was like, should I like quit my job and pull all my money into making Jurassic Park the ballet? And then they like, they do a lot of research and they kind of like, well, we found like this thing and then we think you should do this or we read about that. And yeah, they're just like, they've got good rapport. They're two friends who like know each other from uni, and then one of them was like, Ollie was like, let's make a podcast. And Helen was like, okay.
Yeah, and that's what they do
now. That's
what
they do now. So yeah. When we actually went to this podcasting thing to learn how to be podcasters. One of the things she actually said was like, oh, with your name, like, don't make any pun on the word podcast. And I was like, oh.
We're like, we already did that. Damn it.
Rule number one, broken.
Failed being podcasters. Yeah, but they've answered some pretty great ones.
Yeah, and they're very, very funny, so you should definitely try
witty.
That. Witty.
And both of them have other podcasts that they're in.
Yeah, so
this is the podcast wormhole.
Yeah, so Rabbit Helen hole. Zaltzman's is The Illusionist, and she kind of talks about the sources of words and like the etymology of that, because she's very interesting. And I've gotten the name
Ollie Mann is the like presenter for the media podcast.
Yes.
Which is, if you're into the media, it's very, very interesting.
There we go. All right, number
I'm so
one.
So excited about her number one. All is right. It Podcast?
That would be so... And I was like, I'm going to talk about this great knitting podcast. No, because remember, the rule is we're not talking about knitting podcasts for this one.
Oh, right.
So I feel like I should do it like yours. And I was like, oh, so there couldn't be any other one. And it would be the Adam and Joe podcast. Lydia is now like holding her head in her hands because she forgot that one.
You know how I forgot it? It's because for some reason I was looking through my podcast app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I must have...
Tell me the excuse.
...deleted it because I've already listened to them so many times and I'd run out of space on my phone and I was trying to make space in the interim. I love you, Adam and Joe.
All right. Adam and Joe, if you haven't listened to them before, they're not on the radio as much. They used to be Six Music DJs and they used to be on XFM as well.
Yeah, before that. Uh-huh.
Years before that, they used to have a television program on Channel 4.
Which would never get made now.
Which would never get made now. It's so, like, wonky in
ridiculous.
Places.
It's worth watching, though. I think it might even be... It's on 4OD.
It's on 4OD.
Yeah.
On internet.
Yes.
Adam and Joe. I don't know how you forgot this, because I think Adam and Joe are the reason we do podcasting.
I don't know how I think it's because I almost don't think of it as a podcast, because it's
just
like...
your friends.
Kind of. Or because it's a radio show or something. I don't know. I don't know how I missed that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. They're the thing that made me really, really love listening to podcasts. But yeah, ooh. Sorry, you have to go and explain that.
All right. Adam and Joe basically are two friends who are like, they've been known each other since they were very young, and they've kind of done like I said, television shows and radio shows. But the podcast I listen to most is their kind of, it's from 2011. It's kind of their archived radio shows they used to do on Saturday morning on Six Music. And I didn't actually listen to Adam Joe on that radio. I think I caught maybe one or two, but I never kind of fell like madly for them, like, because they are so funny. If you like sillies, they are your men.
But no, we shouldn't make people listen to them, because then we won't be as funny in comparison.
Yeah, because you might just draw parallels and copy from them.
They are so good. And they went to school with Louis Theroux.
I know, yeah. So they're kind of... They do lots of silly jingles, and they basically get people to write in and tell them silly things, which I think is 90% of their charm, but also they're just two friends who are having an amazingly funny time. It is dangerous. You can't listen to this podcast when you're in public sometimes, because I have been on, like, trains, like, doubled over,
like,
holding
giggling.
My stomach.
Yeah. See, whereas I get with Radiolab, there's been times where I was, like, crying, because it was so moving, but I'm not sure that I... Oh, it's too late. I've chosen my top three. Too late.
Anyway, so that's what we'd recommend.
And we'd love to hear your recommendations, as with, of course, our new movie club and book club, where we get, like, all these amazing recommendations from you guys. So we'd love to hear what podcasts you listen to as well.
I feel I want to talk about Adam and Joe more, because I just love them so much, but...
I know, me too. And then we can do, like, skits. We can reenact them, but not right now.
Not right now. No, maybe we'll just later, just, like... lie somewhere and just laugh about Adam and Joe and just being like, oh, remember that? Anyway, this is getting weird. We've had too much smoothie. I'm getting all excited. All right, well, speaking of podcasts, if you did like this one, you can rate us on iTunes.
You sure can, and we would like it if you did.
I was like, we'd like you if you gave us a high rating. yeah, and you can always keep up to date with what we're doing and what other people are doing and chatting about on the Ravelry forums. There's a pom-pom group there, so we'd like to see you there.
You can always email us, podcast@pompommag.com. We'd love to hear from you if you have any like fun stories or suggestions. I mean, of course, you can post them in the group. But
sometimes you have a lengthy story.
Yeah, sometimes you can email them also.
Yeah, and we will most likely read them out if they're good. All right, guys, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Pomcast is produced by Lydia Gluck and Sophie Scott. Lots of help from Eli Block, who created the original music for this show. For more Eli-related music, go to goodgirlandthebadtimes.com.
Many thanks to Felicity Ford for being our interviewee and letting us use her Shetland Wool Week song. Big thanks as always to Megan, the co-founder and editor of Pom Pom. Thanks again to Yarn in the City for sponsoring this podcast. And of course, we'd like to say a big thank you to all you Pom Pom buyers, subscribers, and now, listeners.
Woo!
Send any feedback or suggestions to podcast@pompommag.com. And don't forget to join our thread on the Pom Pom Ravelry group.